Hi, welcome to the Travel Advice Show. Today's August 11th, and you can find all our travel shows, our podcasts, at www.traveladviceshow.com. And I'm Chris Newton, one of the co-hosts. And my other great co-host is Jerry Fuller. And Jerry would like to introduce our topic and our guest today.
Yes, I'm really excited about it because we're going to be talking about scuba diving, which is something I did for over 20 years and absolutely love it. We're really excited about having with us the owner of Great Expeditions, a great company, and it is Marjana Hilwig. Welcome, Marjana. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, Jerry. Thank you.
Yeah, welcome. Fabulous.
Again, we're really excited about having you as our guest on a topic that's really worldwide. It gives you a chance to travel all over. Could we ask, I want to ask, first of all, a question. If you just barely got your scuba certification and out of the swimming pool and the local lake, and you wanted to go on a real open water dive, where would you recommend, or several places recommend, that first-time divers, beginning divers would want to go?
Well, the good news is that as a new diver, you have a whole world to explore. So your first dive trip is most likely not going to be anywhere near your last dive trip. But as far as getting you to a destination that's going to be offering easy conditions, being a novice diver, not having necessarily the skills under your belt to deal with more advanced conditions, that is an important consideration. And a lot of people end up going to Mexico for their first dive trip, not because it is, in my opinion, the easiest destination, but because of its logistics and its cost. So while, the Caribbean side of Mexico, Cozumel, the Yucatan Peninsula, Acamal area, does offer great diving for great value, I would probably recommend that people look to some other areas that might have easier conditions. I think Bonaire is an excellent destination in the Caribbean. The access can be from both boat as well as from beach, and you're not dealing with wall dives and extreme depths as well. You're not dealing with excess currents, which are two issues as a novice diver that make, you know, your diving more difficult. So if you're looking to dive in other waters besides the Caribbean, again, there's a lot of choices out there in the world, and some of them are going to offer easier conditions than others. Australia is a great destination for a beginner. Not all areas of Australia, but if you get on board a trip that's doing, say, a three-day liveaboard on the Great Barrier Reef, most of the conditions along that dive itinerary is going to be fine for a beginner diver.
Mm. Very good. And because it's a worldwide destination for diving anywhere in the world, there really you can dive year-round. Isn't that right? That somewhere in the world year-round? Do you think that's right?
Absolutely. You know, seasonality is a real big factor when you're choosing a dive destination. And if you are set in a certain time frame when you need to travel, it may not be a good time to go diving in one part of the world, but likely it's going to be a fine time to go diving in another part of the world. A good example of that is the hurricane season in the Caribbean, September, October time frame, is an area time of year when you tend to shy away from going down to Mexico or somewhere else in the Caribbean because of that hurricane season. But conversely, it's an excellent time to be in the South Pacific, and indeed is one of the peak times of year for getting typically good weather and calm seas to go diving.
One thing that I find interesting about selecting a destination for diving is what there is to do other than diving. Because some people, like if they do a liveaboard, well, maybe it better first of all start some definition. What is a liveaboard for diving?
Well, it's a bit self. What's the word here? I'm looking for descriptive. You know, liveaboard is where you're on a boat, living on board the boat, and liveaboards are found around the world. Some areas, they're an absolute necessity. It's the only way you can access a more remote area. Some areas, it's just a means of doing it in a different manner rather than basing at a land-based resort. So a liveaboard typically is going to be something you're on a boat for, if not just an overnight, of up to a week, 10 days. So, again, depending on the destination as far as how remote it is and where you're going, as far as how long your itinerary would be on board the boat. Different levels of liveaboards, they range from being very basic boats to being very luxurious vessels. Again, some areas of the world, they're an absolute necessity. Examples of that would be the Galapagos Islands. You really need to be on board a boat to dive the Galapagos Islands. Australia, another destination where you see a lot of resorts advertising land-based diving, but they're not truly on the Great Barrier Reef. So if you're looking to get out to the true Great Barrier Reef and even beyond where the diving is considered the best in the Coral Sea, you do need to be on a liveaboard. And that's logistics due to how far away from land it is. It's just not an area you can access doing a day trip from a land-based destination. So liveaboards are a great way to go. A lot of people ask about that if they've never been on one. A lot of people have concerns perhaps for their first liveaboard trip. Some of those concerns might be along the lines of, what if I get on board a boat with a bunch of people I don't like? And, well, that's certainly something that can happen. But realistically, you tend to be with like-minded people who are out there to enjoy the sport of diving and to enjoy the destination that they're traveling to, and to enjoy the destination in the manner that the liveaboard is allowing them to do, usually a more remote area of the destination in question. So,
well, one thing that I find on liveaboard is the evening, even though you're on the boat, the evenings are spent talking about everybody's dive experiences and comparing them and talking about what's going to happen the next day. So you really don't have too much time to have any disagreements or problems because you're so excited about what you've done and what you're going to do. But actually, as you said, like-minded people, and they just talk and have a fabulous time in almost every case that I've ever been on one.
Absolutely. I can't tell you the countless number of times you've met people that you just tend to then plan your next dive trip with because you've had such a good time
right.
with them. And, that happens all the time. Clients are, contacting us to let us know they want to coordinate with somebody they met on a boat or they heard about this great destination or another boat somewhere else because it was somebody they talked to while they were on a trip. So that's very true. And like I said, it's oftentimes with like-minded people. So you do tend to meet some great folks. But other concerns people have with liveaboards are that they might not be a dedicated die-hard diver type of person. And so they're concerned about being on a boat with, gung-ho divers and being coerced into doing more diving perhaps than what they're up for. And again, that's really not the situation. Liveaboards tend to be very relaxing. It's very much a do-as-you-want type of environment. The diving is there for you to do, and chances are you'll probably end up doing more diving than you would at a land-based destination just because it's so much easier. When you're on a boat, everything's hooked up, your dive gear, you're not messing with hauling it back and forth from your hotel to your room or the dive storage to the boat, et cetera. And all you have to do is jump into your wetsuit, go out the back deck, and off you go on your dive. So liveaboards have a lot of advantages. Again, they are a necessity in some areas. But besides that, they're very good value. You do tend to get more diving for your dollar. They also offer, if you're a solo diver, a great way to go diving without having to be penalized for single supplements. As long as you're willing to share your cabin with another diver on board, then you usually are paying the same price as you would if you were traveling with a companion. So I love them.
I was very hesitant myself
for my first liveaboard trip, which was Australia. And after I did an 8-day trip out to the Coral Sea, I'll take a liveaboard over a land-based any day.
I know. And the places that you go, some of the diving is phenomenal, like in the Solomons and some of the ones around the Indian Ocean or somewhere that you just can't get to, and it's just really virgin diving, and the diving is phenomenal.
It's not quite as crowded,
and it's just it's a different experience totally. Let's spend just a minute on, we were talking about maybe going with a spouse. For example, my wife would rather dive than scuba dive. I shouldn't say that here on this program. But she, when we go, when I'm diving on trips, and I'd like to dive and not, we have to stay in a hotel because a resort type of situation, because my wife wants to shop, nightlife, etc. And what are some of the destinations that you recommend for people who really love to dive, but yet the partner they're going with, it's either not going to do it or it might dive one time. Do you have any suggestions on that?
That's a pretty broad question.
I know.
It really does depend. on the non-diver in terms of their interest and how willing they are to be in remote areas or not, and how much entertainment they need in terms of developed, you know, areas. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I would even go back to the liveaboard question and say a non-diver can even enjoy a liveaboard very much. I've taken groups down on the boats and had snorkelers on board with us, and they've had just as much fun as the divers have had. But they're obviously geared towards being in a remote location on a boat and can enjoy what a boat has to offer, which is, you know, reading, relaxing, snorkeling, perhaps.
It's wonderful, isn't it?
But if you've got someone who does need more entertainment in terms of development, resort entertainment or shopping access, dine around access, that sort of thing. Typically, a lot of the islands in the Caribbean are going to offer that, where you can be at a resort and you'll still be able to access going into town, having other island activities, depending on the island itself, whether you can explore on the island in terms of hiking and that sort of thing, or if it's going to be geared more to water-based activities, snorkeling, kayaking, that sort of thing. The more remote areas, for example, I have a family group, and they sort of have a diverse group of people within their family, and they like to do a trip together, but there are certain parameters. They like to dine around. They do have non-divers in there. And then the divers themselves happen to be very, very eager divers and like to get the best diving. So it's always a challenge to find a spot that's going to get all of those interests taken care of. They went to Fiji last year.
Well,
and a lot of people wouldn't necessarily think of Fiji because some of the better diving areas on Fiji are on remote islands and there isn't really the access to dine around and that sort of thing. But there's a few areas there on the archipelago on the main island that had the combination of good diving and then they could be on the mainland to do some other activities. So that ended up working well and they actually all enjoyed their trip very much. So it doesn't have to be that you need to go to a main city area in order to access other things for the non-diver. But you need to be careful within the destination where you position yourself.
Let's talk about the different kinds of diving for a moment. Do you find that most divers like to combine kind of diving like wall diving and cave diving, hole diving, or reef diving, or do they like to specialize in it? Like if they want wall diving, they want to go mainly wall diving, or do you have any ideas on that?
You know, I don't honestly experience a whole lot of specific requests in terms of I want to go wall diving or I want to go just general diving. But a lot of people will indicate their interest with kind of saying what they like to do in terms of I'm a real critter person. So if you're somebody who really enjoys, especially photographers, finding little nitty-gritty stuff, there are certain places around the world that are going to offer that sort of diving more so than others. And the classic, of course, is in Indonesia and off of Manado and Lembeh Straits area. Also Papua New Guinea. Some of the regions around Papua New Guinea have very good what's called muck diving or macro diving.
Right.
Malaysia. St. Vincent in the Caribbean is well-renowned for having little critters that you can go explore. Wreck diving is another very big concept that people, you know, really enjoy doing wreck diving. Truk Lagoon, of course, is very well-known for being the capital of wreck diving. But there's a lot of other destinations that will offer some great wrecks. South Pacific tends to have a few of those. Vanuatu, the wreck of President Coolidge, is probably one of the most accessible. Yeah, excellent dive. You could spend 2 weeks just diving the wreck, and it's actually accessible from shore. So that's a destination a lot of people aren't maybe as well aware of. And certainly within the Solomon Islands, a lot of the World War II relics are down under the ocean there. So wall diving, I guess don't hear too often people actually asking specifically for wall diving, but they may, again, indicate that they tend to like that style. And anywhere where you're going to be diving off of atolls, you'll tend to get your great wall dives. And atoll diving being, you know, a coral island that's it's actually made out of coral. It's come to the surface, been exposed, formed a landmass, and you have an island, Cozumel being a great example. So there's very good wall divings because you have the depths of the ocean coming up to this island. Another area, again, Australia. This is an area that's not, again, for the beginner diver going to Australia, but for the more advanced diver that wants to do a little bit more than just the Great Barrier Reef, to do a liveaboard trip that will take them out to the Coral Sea, and they can dive the atolls of Osprey or Holmes or Flinders, and you get, you know, your true depth while diving out there thousands of feet up to the surface of the sea. And that's very exciting. What you get with wall diving, of course, is your multi-level profile. So you can get your small critter stuff in the shallower waters, and you can go down to depths and get your big pelagics and your sharks and deeper water critters. So,
yeah, fantastic. Let me ask a real quick question on length of time for your trip. I know in travel advice you get people that want to go around the world in 42 minutes. And in diving, you just can't do that or shouldn't do that, should you?
No.
Do you want to talk a little bit about the length of time that you need to plan if you're going to go diving?
So, you know, obviously it depends on where you're going to go.
Right.
You can easily, you know, from the U.S., most places in the U.S., you can pop down to Mexico and make a long weekend out of it and get a couple of days of diving in. And your relative time of getting there and expense to get there is small enough that it can warrant that sort of shorter trip. When you start talking about traveling to a destination that's going to be time intensive and money intensive to get to, then you need to weigh, and of course this is a personal preference too, what's expensive for one person is not necessarily for another, but when you're talking about going as far away as a destination in Southeast Asia, Thailand or Indonesia or Australia and the South Pacific, those areas, you take time, you've got the dateline, you're crossing over, you need to allow some additional time for your travel. You need to allow a little time to recover from your travel so that you're not just jumping into the diving being dehydrated and jet lagged and fatigued, all those factors which can lead to DCS and so on. So having a bit more time for the destination that you're going to is an important factor. As well, if you do have other interests that you're going to be doing besides the diving, allowing yourself enough time to enjoy the destination land side as well.
Yeah. You know, it seems like there's a lot of accommodations that are geared toward scuba divers. Is that true? Like, can a lot of destinations, these accommodations are really geared toward scuba divers? Is there quite a few around the world?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
In areas of the world where they've developed the scuba diving market, you're going to have resorts, whether land-based or liveaboard, that are gearing and marketing and targeting and specializing to catering to scuba divers.
Yeah.
Any dive destination is going to have some aspect of that. And I think what's happened with today's diver is that we do have, as the sport has grown, we do have a lot more people involved in it that also have other interests. So you don't have just the dedicated diver. It's not,
right,
you know, the old school where you didn't care about what your accommodation was. You were just going there to dive. And,
yeah,
you know,
just sleep on a floor. Staying
on the beach was okay.
Yeah.
Nowadays, you do have the multi-interest. You have the divers traveling with the divers. You have families.
Right.
Family market's a big one. So you've
right.
got divers traveling with their kids. A lot of these folks need to have services so that they can go diving and know that their kids are being taken care of and entertained so that their kids are having a vacation too.
Uh-huh.
So you do get a gamut in terms of what style of services are going to be offered, and a lot of times those are the same factors that people are considering when looking at the destination and or given resort within the destination.
Right.
I have a couple families from the East Coast that travel every year. They're very dedicated divers, and their main focus is to going to great dive destinations, and yet they have small children ranging from 5 to 8 years old between them, and
uh-huh.
it's very important that their kids also have a vacation, so they're not going to just dump them with a babysitter. They want to make sure their kids are having a really good time in some sort of kids program doing some things like diving. So it does limit some of the areas where they can go in terms of the resorts even accepting children.
Oh, okay. Children, yeah.
Yeah. And so, again, Fiji is a great family destination that has fantastic
mm-hmm.
diving. They're actually going to be going to Fiji again for their second time.
Mm-hmm. Great.
So, yeah, the family market, the dedicated diver that, again, doesn't care about the accommodation, just wants to get in the water as much as possible. I have one diver, you know, the first question out of his mouth is, how many dives am I going to get in a day?
Right.
And he doesn't really care about anything else.
Right.
And then the multi-interest, like we've discussed, the diver combining with the non-diver companion. So there are a lot of factors and issues when you're looking at choosing a dive destination.
Nice. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Like that's good to hear that it's getting more catered to all different types of styles. And yeah, what is your preference that you like to when you go traveling around the world? You know, do you have a preference that you do? Or?
Oh, I always used to say I've never been a diehard diver. I got into the dive industry a long time ago.
I
worked for a dive shop, and that's how I started off in dive travel.
Oh, all right.
About, 18, 19 years ago now.
Oh.
And so when I opened up Great Expeditions, I did so with a focus to the dive industry. But my personal style has always been to really delve into and explore what else there is to do in a given destination.
Yeah, yeah.
I'd love to get out and see the animals and meet the people and go hiking and just everything that a spot might have to offer. So personally for me, when I travel, I do enjoy the diving, non-diving kind of activities. Having said that, I've been fortunate enough to have been to a lot of dive destinations in the world. And many of them have been remote. And again, you're out on a boat. You're there to dive. That's what you're doing. But at the same time, you're also immersing yourself in the culture of the destination.
Yeah.
And I think that's a big trend. I think more and more people are looking to know that what they're doing is having a positive impact on where they're going. I know that's another big topic, of course, you know, the green aspect, the ecotourism aspect, the sustainability aspect of travel in general.
Yeah.
And that's certainly very true for the dive industry. You know, all the time we're hearing about the oceans and the concern with the coral reefs and the damage that humans are causing to the ecosystems. And so a lot of the divers are being involved in programs also that are doing what they can to help save the coral reefs and limit the impact of mankind on it. In fact, the Galapagos is a classic example. They just have changed their whole park rules this past year, and they severely limited the number of permits that are being available for diving. And as a result, that's a destination that you need to really think about booking well in advance. It's a bit of a hot spot right now.
Okay.
In terms of a great deal of interest in the area, people want to go. They realize that there's a lot out there that may not be there in future generations, and they want to see it while it's still intact.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times, if you're talking about a group booking a full boat charter or half boat charter, they're doing so as far out as 2011 right now, if not further out.
Really?
Absolutely. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Planning 2, 3, 4 years in advance. To get their spot on the boat. Now, as an individual traveler, you know, you're a one-person, two-person, it's going to not necessarily have to be that far out, but you still think a year, perhaps plus, if you're very specific in your time frame as to when you can go. And so that's another factor, you know.
Yeah.
The world is shrinking.
Yeah.
I know.
Right.
I know. Well, Marganam, we want you to, before we go, is, to have you tell everyone how they can contact you by website, phone, etc.
Yeah.
Again, my company is Great Expedition.
Hello?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can, yeah.
Hello?
Okay. I think we lost Jerry.
Oh, okay. That's all right, yeah. Okay. Yeah, if you just say your website and how to get a hold of you if they have any questions about scuba diving around the world, planning their trips.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
My company, again, is Great Expeditions, and
Hello?
The website is www.greatexpeditionstravel.com.
Okay.
Our toll-free number is 888-SNORKEL, and be happy to answer any questions that anyone has about diving around the world.
Wonderful. Well, thanks again, and that's great. Yeah, when we